is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, October 29th, 2024. And today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney, working from my hotel in New York following Game 3 of the World Series on Monday night. Taylor Schwenk is working from the Schwenk Studios. And Taylor, I haven't asked you this, okay? I mean, It's October 29th. It's like jumping out at me. And I was talking with Ben Cafardo, who, of course, works in PR for ESPN. And his dad was a longtime baseball writer, Hall of Fame baseball writer, Nick Cafardo for the Boston Globe. And he was saying to me that when we got to the end of October, it was always a question, would dad be home for Halloween? And the way this World Series is going, all dads will be home for Halloween.
I know that is something that jumped onto my radar this year, being a new father. So I was yes, definitely aware of that. I was like, am I going to have to, not that Lolo goes to bed that late, but like, am I going to have to contend with some work on Halloween night? So, you know, come on, Yankees, you didn't put up any fight. Think about the dads and moms of America.
Oh, man. And try to finish it off. What is Lola going to be for Halloween?
Lola has two costumes. She's going to be a showgirl.
Now, two costumes?
I know that sounds risque, but I think it's from the Barry Manilow song.
Okay.
So listen to that if you're confused about the reference, but she's going to be a showgirl.
I know it. Yeah. I'm old.
Yellow feathers
like
in her hair.
70s Lola. Got it.
Yep. And then she's going to be a pumpkin as well. So we felt like she had to be classic baby pumpkin on Halloween for her first Halloween.
So if the Dodgers wrap up the World Series tonight, I'll be back on a plane to Montana. The first thing I'm going to do when I jump off, besides going and picking up my dog at doggy daycare, is to turn the pumpkins that we grew in our garden this year into jack-o'-lanterns. Like, oh, I mean, man, that's the immediate, like, on the list right away. I got to do that and get those ready for Halloween night for all the kids in the neighborhood.
Wow, Buster, you are also writing off the Yankees here. Looking ahead to
No, I'm not. I'm just, you and I, we talked before we started taping about the contingencies. You got to cover these, but let's face it, 3-0 is 3-0 with the history. Only one time in the history of baseball has any team come back from that.
That's grim. That's a grim statistic.
Yeah, it is. All right, we're going to be talking about that with the clown car, Eduardo Perez, Jessica Mendoza, Boog Shambi. And we'll also be speaking, as we continue to talk to managers in these really, for me, really fun interviews during the postseason, Ron Washington, the manager of the Angels, who, of course, knows the presumptive the World Series MVP, Freddie Freeman, really well from all the years they had together in Atlanta. So Dodgers and Yankees played Game 3 in Yankee Stadium last night. You could tell during the introductions, like the Yankee fans at Yankee Stadium were trying to work the team back into this series. You know, they're giving a huge cheer when Aaron Judge was announced, introduced along the first base foul line. They were chanting MVP, MVP. They're trying to get him going. And man, Freddie Freeman took the air out of the building.
One out, the 1-2. Swing and a ball driven right field, way back, and forget it. It's gone. Freddie Freeman has homered for the third straight game in this World Series, and now five consecutive World Series games. Freeman does the job, a two-run homer, and the Dodgers strike first with what else? The long ball.
That, of course, was the voice of the legend, Boog Shambi, on ESPN Radio. He and Jess and Eduardo doing the games on ESPN Radio during the World Series. You're going to hear later Walker Buehler talk about the impact of that Freeman home run in the first inning. All right, top of the third inning, the Dodgers leading 2-0, and they extended that lead.
The 3-2. Swing and a little flare out into right field. Charging in is Soto. It'll bounce and fall for a hit. Racing around third and coming in to score is Edmund. It's a bloop single to right for Mookie Betts, and the Dodgers have added on, and it's 3-0.
And meanwhile, Walker Buehler was throwing the ball great. He had a great fastball, electric stuff, and he had great defense being played behind him.
Deal one. Swing and a line drive right center field. Diving in is Betts, and he makes the catch. He got a weird read on it. He thought it was going to cut towards the gap a bit more and immediately kind of took a left turn and dove towards second base. And the six-time Gold Glover was able to lay out and make the catch.
In recent days, it feels like the Yankees offense has been Giancarlo Stanton and Juan Soto, and you hope for anything else. Well, the Yankees had a chance to score in the bottom of the fourth inning. Stanton, of course, hit a double. He was on second base when this happened.
2-2. Swing and a line drive. That's a base hit into left field. Hernandez will pick it up on a bounce. Here's the throw to the plate. On a hop. Tag. Out at the plate. Stanton cut down by Teoscar Hernandez. Will Smith putting the tag on Giancarlo Stanton. A one-hop throw from left field. And this one stays 3-0.
So, Taylor, you'll hear in the clown card, you know, we were debating on whether or not the runner Stanton should have been sent in that situation. I thought absolutely not. You're down 3 runs. You have Anthony Rizzo potentially coming up. Stanton is, as we've seen all year, does not run well. He was waved through as you were watching this game. What did you think?
I thought it was fine. Teoscar Hernandez's throw was just, it was on the spot, man. It was like,
you are nuts.
It was so perfect. I feel like they got to get something going, man. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little crazy.
Yeah, you are a little crazy. That's what I think. Anyway, you know, we'll see. We're going to talk to Yankees people out at the ballpark later today. All right. The Dodgers extended the lead to 4-0. In the bottom of the ninth inning, Alex Verdugo came to the plate with 2 outs and a runner on.
Kopech ready and fires. Swing and a fly ball. Well struck right field. Betts back near the wall. Gone! Alex Verdugo, a 2-run homer. And just like that, the Yankees are within 2.
You know what was really curious about that, Taylor? I was watching the Yankee dugout after that happened, and the reaction of Verdugo as he rounded the bases. The crowd was excited, but it felt like the Yankees players were reserved. And I just thought it was me being an idiot thinking that. And then after the game, David Ortiz mentioned it post game, like it surprised him that the Yankees weren't more excited. It was almost like they were like, yeah, okay, it's 4-2 now, but man, it's just too much.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I noticed that Ortiz picked up on that on the broadcast, and he was definitely, he kind of said that was their whole attitude throughout the game. That's kind of what he was like, you can't win if that's how you're feeling after you scored in the bottom of the ninth. Like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, I thought they'd be bouncing around a little bit. Anyway, final score was 4-2. I got a chance to speak with Walker Buehler.
Walker Buehler, you win game 3. Looked like you were looking for family up in the stands.
Yeah, you know, we have a 9-month-old daughter now, so things are a little different than back in the day.
All right, in this game, tell me what Freddie Freeman's home run top of the first inning did for you.
It's hard to explain kind of what it means to have a little bit of a lead going, especially on the road. And if you score first, you win a lot of games, and our team kind of shows that.
All right. 8-9 days ago, if someone would have told you that Freddie was going to hit home runs in each of the first 3 games, what would you have said?
You know what? Freddie's one of the best baseball players in the world, and people don't really talk about it a ton, but I've faced that man, and it's no fun, so I don't think it's super surprising.
5 dominant innings for you. What do you feel like you were doing well?
Keeping them off balance a little bit. I rely a lot on my cutter, and I think I kind of put that in the back pocket a little bit today and threw some other stuff. So I don't know if it was a game plan thing or what, but I felt good out there. I love this kind of stuff, and cold weather, it doesn't get much better than this for me, at least, objectively for me to pitch, and then you add the adrenaline, and it's hard to beat.
I also got a chance to talk with Freddie Freeman.
Freddie, 3 homers in 3 games, home runs in 5 straight World Series games. What's going on with you?
I don't know. That's the beautiful thing about baseball. You just don't know. I got myself in a good spot with my swing in those days off. I got the ankle in a good spot, so I've been able to work on my swing. And I've been seeing the ball really well. You know, I've been swinging at the strikes and taking the balls. Kind of what you're trying to do and accomplish in these games. And ultimately, I've been getting the ball over the fence.
Tell me what's going through your mind as you're rounding the bases after another home run.
Yeah, I'm just glad. When you come into a road park in a World Series, you want to try and take the crowd out of it as fast as we could. And we were able to do that in the first, and Walker was unbelievable tonight. So, I don't know, I was just excited that we were get the runs on the board early.
Tell me what you thought Walker was doing well.
He had it all working. I faced him plenty of times in big games, and that's what he does, and pitches great in big games. 5 strong innings, of course, our bullpen came in. That's what you got to do in October, is pitch, and we've been doing it.
What'd you see in Shohei tonight?
I told him before the game, I'm just proud. To go out there and give everything you have when you're not feeling good and doing everything you can to get on that field, And to get on base twice, it's special. There's a reason why he's, in my opinion, one of the greatest athletes on this planet, and he showed it again tonight.
You guys one win away from winning the World Series. Yeah. How are you feeling about that?
Feeling pretty good. So we're in a great spot. Tomorrow we got our bullpen, and our guy's going to be going strong, and hopefully we can get some runs for him and get this thing going.
Freddie, thanks.
And, you know, I'm really curious about what Ron Washington thinks watching Freddie Freeman have all the success given their years together with the Atlanta Braves. Aaron Boone, Yankees manager, talked about his chances of coming back.
We're trying to get a game tomorrow, okay? That's where our focus lies. So hopefully we can go be this amazing story and shock the world. But right now it's about trying to get a lead, trying to grab a game and force another one and then on from there. But we got to grab one first.
And he was asked, what does Aaron Judge need to do to break out of a slump?
Come ready to go tomorrow. He's Aaron Judge. And just continue to work and hopefully get on time and connect on some.
All right, Taylor, what else you got before we hear from the clown car?
Buster, just a heads up to the listeners tomorrow. So, you know, the series could end tonight. We could go to game five. You know, we're drawing up contingencies over here. But yep. For the most part, it seems like Tori Lavello will join us on the show tomorrow, and we're going to do another clown car edition of the podcast. So another exciting episode. I'm excited for everyone here. Ron Washington was great, and so was the clown car. So really strong episode of the podcast coming your way.
This is a clown car edition, World Series style. All right, go ahead, Boog. You have more to say?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
You sure about that?
Positive.
All right, we're talking, we're in the car going back to the hotel after Game 3 of the World Series. The Dodgers have taken a stranglehold. They've outscored the Yankees 14-7 in the first three games of this World Series. Eduardo, that's exactly what I predicted. It's pretty amazing.
As the GPS lets us know where we're going, hopefully Rob does not get us lost. Just as we predicted, look, the reality is the Dodgers have played really good fundamental baseball defensively, running the bases, and they have a guy named Freddie. And Freddie Freeman in the 15th pitch of the game silenced an entire crowd that was unbelievably ecstatic to be out there and ready to cheer.
Can we just talk about what that did 15 pitches in, going up 2-0, not just silencing the crowd, but what it did for Walker Buehler? And he talked about it post-game with Buster and saying, look, I can't even begin to describe what being in this stadium and having two runs before I even throw a pitch. And what we saw from Walker was so vintage. Bring it back, Walker Buehler, throwing 95-plus, top of the zone, the conviction, the confidence that he had. I have not seen that from him this year. And even though he had a great Met start in the NLCS Game 3, it was more about the breaking ball. This was about the fastball, and that's the Walker Buehler that we remember.
What do I say now? I mean, you talked about Buehler, you talked about Freeman. I just think that at this point, it seems like this is a mismatch, doesn't it? I mean, I don't know that I anticipated it was going to be this level, but it's playing out pretty clearly that the difference in these two lineups is significant. And, you know, for the most part, the Yankees were a team carried by two guys, not the same two guys as right now, but it was Judge and Soto the whole year. Now it's Stanton and Soto, but it's a Dodger lineup that just has, again, more length and depth. And whether it's Teoscar Hernandez or Betts or Freeman or Kike Hernandez or Tommy Edman, they just have so many guys that are contributing. And then the little things, talked about the defense and the base running. I think tomorrow will be a challenge, that's for sure. It's going to be hard for them to cobble together 27 outs. But the thing is, if Luis Gil doesn't go out there and really shove, you know the way this thing works is if somebody goes bang in the first two innings for the Dodgers and comes up with a homer, it's got to make the Yankees start to think, is this it? We're done here tonight? So we'll see.
You had a lot to say. That's cool.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the Yankees are going to be well aware on this 20th anniversary of the Red Sox in 2004 coming back from a 3-0 deficit that that's the only team in baseball history that has ever done that. Eduardo, it was interesting tonight during the course of the game how many times the Yankee fans were trying to get the Yankees going, right? Especially when Judge would come to the plate. But despite all that, I mean, the Yankees are got to be swimming up some stream against their own lack of confidence for a better, lacking for a better way to describe it.
That's what good pitching does, though. it makes it look like they have a lack of confidence. It makes them look overmatched. It makes them look like there's no energy. But the reality is you have to give a lot of credit to the Dodger pitching, defense. They've done a really good job. Now, Aaron Judge has to be able to do Aaron Judge things. Led the league with runners on base, runners in scoring position, an OPS over 1,200 so far in this postseason, has struggled. He's struggled in this World Series. I think what Aaron Boone has to do is try to find someone in that clubhouse to be that Millar like the Red Sox had him in 2004 and get these guys going and make them believe that they can, one game at a time, to try to get the ball to Gerrit Cole in Game 5.
I think the guy trying to be that right now is Anthony Rizzo. He had a great at-bat in the ninth inning to get on base to then lead to Alex Verdugo with that two-run home run. I know that's not the moment that anyone's going to remember, but I do believe the fact that it was against Michael Kopech. You're talking about six pitchers out of the Dodgers' bullpen, and guess what? Game 4 is going to be a bullpen game, and now this Yankees team has seen all of the big arms multiple times, and I do think that that's an advantage for the Yankees, especially because it was guys at the bottom of the order who have been silent like nothing, and Anthony Rizzo getting that at-bat, getting on base to get Verdugo with that home run is everything they're going to rely on going into Game 4.
Boog, what do you think is going on with Aaron Judge?
Look, it's funny because when we spoke to Aaron Boone about it, he seemed to kind of push off the idea that he's tight or that he's feeling pressure. I do think it becomes a giant loop. I mean, I think that it starts with something mechanical, and then I think that the pressure that you feel, that I'm sure it's as much internal from himself. He expects to deliver great things. And then, look, eventually he's going to get out of it. I don't know whether it's going to be tomorrow night in this World Series or it's going to be in 2025. But he didn't get bad. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know when or how. But he'll figure it out and he'll fix it. And it's just, you know, a matter of you got to have some patience. Unfortunately, you know, they're a game from elimination. And you can't really have it, I guess.
Eduardo, what'd you see in Shohei Ohtani in Game 3?
I saw a guy that's showing a lot of grit being out there right now. Is he 100%? Absolutely. He's not. He grimaced a few times on a couple swings. And, you know, yeah, it's concerning for the Dodgers. But most importantly, even running the bases, I saw him holding on to his collar while he was taking his lead and even running the second base on the double play by Mookie Betts. Look, this is a guy that has a lot of pride. He's out there because he can beat you with his legs, he can beat you with the bat, and right now the entire nation of Japan is up in the mornings watching Shohei Ohtani. It's to a standstill. So he's out there with the responsibility to the Dodgers. He's for the baseball fans here and also over there. But it's a gritty performance so far. Getting on base twice, man, you got to give him a lot of credit, a lot of heart.
I don't think he can hit the outside pitch right now. I didn't think with that left shoulder, as a left-handed hitter myself who's very right side dominant, I thought we'd actually be okay until I saw him take swings on pitches that were middle away. And that's a huge power source that he's shown throughout the year, to be able to hit the ball to opposite field, even though we see moonshots that he can also pull. So I think it's a big concern, something that the Yankees definitely saw, and they're going to continue now to throw him. Usually it's up and in, but I think now the way to go is to be able to attack him middle away, especially with off-speed stuff, see if he'll chase. But we saw the most pain, the most grimacing, when he swung at pitches where he had to extend that backside, and especially using that shoulder to try to put anything the other way.
Boog, you know Aaron Boone, you know Anthony Rizzo, you know other guys in that Yankee clubhouse. Tell me, you know, how you would imagine that they would sort of construct the conversation as they go into Game 4 on Tuesday.
I don't think that the conversation is the crucial thing. I really believe that, you know, they'll have some talk, etc. But to me, it's like when a hitter is in a slump, the way you get out of a slump is there's no way anybody can ever pour confidence into you. You have to get results when you're not confident, and that's what's going to have to happen. So they can have a meeting, they can talk, but it's not – in the end, they're going to have to figure out a way to come up with a win and then slowly start to believe and get confidence. I don't think that they're going to sit there and, you know, feel great about winning this series. I think they just, you take it with, let's win game four and go from there. But I don't know that there's going to be some win one for the Gipper speech, and they get a huge hole to climb out of.
Buster, what's your takeaway of the Yankees being able to win tomorrow?
I really think that, I mean, it comes down to, and it's interesting because after the game, Aaron Boone was asked by a reporter, and I don't know the details of it, this is just related to me, that some reporter basically asked him, hey, how do you feel about your team's chances down 3-0? And Boone shot the reporter like this absolute glare. And then went on and answered the question. I just don't think players think that way in this time. You know, it's the old cliche of taking one game at a time, just show up tomorrow and win a baseball game. You know, during the course of the year, they've shown up at the ballpark and they've won one baseball game, and then, you know, you go from there. Anybody who's seen the Netflix series about the Red Sox comeback in 2004 knows all that. You know, I think Aaron Boone will try to keep as loose as possible, but I agree with what Boog said. And I do think, you know, that the Yankees could use what the Dodgers got tonight with Freddie Freeman getting an early home run and, you know, silencing the crowd. The Yankees need the opposite of that. They need Aaron Judge, you know, or a Gleyber Torres or Juan Soto or somebody to do something early in the game to give them the lead and start to turn this thing around. Eduardo, during the course of the broadcast, I wanted to ask you about this. You were really, at times, like Mark Carlson's strike zone, you looked befuddled.
I did, and I used an A word as well. But look, this is the World Series, and I think with what Major League Baseball already has technology of having a challenge system at the minor league level, and it having a close association to the minor league baseball, I think it's coming sooner than ever, and I think it's needed. I understand the umpires do a great job behind the plate. They see so many pitches, but when there's so much on the line, and it was for both teams, it wasn't just one-sided. When there's so much on the line, I think that the fans, the players, and, you know, everyone deserves to get those calls right.
So that situation was one example in which you wondered if the Yankees would get back into the game. Another, Jess, was early in the game when Teoscar Hernandez threw out Giancarlo Stanton for the third out of an inning when the Yankees were down 3-0. I saw Eduardo when that play was in progress. He basically threw up his two hands like he was a third base coach in the booth. He was saying, no, don't, no. And Stanton was thrown out at home. What did you think of that play? Because I know post-game there was some debate about it. Our colleague Jesse Rogers, I think, tweeted out that he thought it was a 50-50 call. I agree with Eduardo. I was shocked that he sent him, especially, you know, in Yankee Stadium, Rizzo coming up next, the opportunity to have, you know, two runners on base.
I mean, honestly, I thought he looked good coming in to third base, and I thought for sure that he was going to look better going from third to home. It was like he hit a wall, which Eduardo has seen Giancarlo Stanton run the bases way more than I have. I did not realize how lacking of speed Giancarlo Stanton is from third to home. And to me, it's a no-brainer hindsight. In the moment, you want some momentum. You want to create something. Make something happen. I get it. It's a 3-0 lead, but you want to get anything to show your team we can do this. And what we've seen from the Yankees offense, that kind of felt like there wasn't going to be a whole lot more after that. So if they don't score there, and it was a bing-bing play, if Giancarlo Stanton could just have literally a half step more, he's safe there.
Just in case, that was the fastest he's run all year, 26.8 feet per second. He's been really slow all year, and his third base coach has seen that all year. When you're down 3-0, Boog, please help me here.
Yeah, you're not gaining enough in that spot. I completely hear you. I just think, again, I would say that you give – I do think that it's something that guys should do more often. I think in that spot, I would have leaned towards being conservative, but it's hard to throw guys out at the plate. Teoscar Hernandez's throw was perfect, and Will Smith did a great job with the tag. But there's nothing to be gained there. So I think you just you sit on it. You don't need just one. So when you're down four in that spot, I don't think that there was much point. But I do think we need to make the case that Teoscar Hernandez executed it really, really well, and Will Smith did also.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think I saw somebody posted that his throw home, maybe it was Sarah Langs, was at 93.9 miles per hour. And you're right, Boog, to point out, I mean, what a great tag by Will Smith. Everything working perfectly in that play. All right, Rob Kelly's gotten us back to the hotel. What with no accidents or anything like that? Better than our Sunday night baseball.
We're not there yet.
Thanks, guys.
We're
live.
Ron Washington is the manager of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Wash, I know you well enough to know you were locked into these playoffs. How are you doing?
I'm doing extremely well, and I am locked in.
Yeah, how much fun is this for you to see the success of the guy who is the heavy favorite at this point to be the World Series MVP and Freddie Freeman?
It's fun. I just love watching him compete. And I sent him a note when he hit that home run in the walk-off. And I said, you a bad eight. And love watching you compete. I just love watching Freddie compete. You know, I saw him for 7 years in Atlanta. And when it comes time, he's ready to go. And he showed that with the ankle injury and the way he played. He's just a competitor, man. And he said last night after they won the game that it's not about him. It's about them winning the World Series.
Yeah, Wash, it was interesting, you know, because, of course, I'm curious about your observations as someone who's known Freddie for a long time. There are a smaller and smaller group of players who have that 162 mentality, right? I think Francisco Lindor absolutely has that mindset. But so many of the people, the Atlanta Braves, talk about Freddie being that guy. You know, other players have told me on the Braves that, you know, when they might miss a game or something like that, when Freddie was on the team, he would give him a look like, really, what are we doing? So tell me what you saw in Freddie as he goes through the playoffs. He has just seven singles. He doesn't have an extra base hit in the first two rounds. He has to not play for a couple games. And then when we were, Boog Sciambi and I are watching him run out for introduction before game on to the World Series, he sprinted out there, and Boog and I are looking at each other like, what happened? Like, he looks completely different physically. What have you seen in him?
What happened was a great move by Dave Roberts to not play him in that last game in New York. He got all that time to really get whatever treatment he needed to get. And when it comes down to treatment, with Freddie don't like to be in the trainer's room, but when it comes to treatment and he has to get it, it's all day long. So he really paid attention to trying to get his leg right because he was not going to miss the World Series. And as far as his swing go, well, Freddie's one of those guys that could be snoring outside and you go wake him up and he can go get a base hit. And the guy just can hit, man. And he's got pride. He's a great teammate. He's everything you want to have on your team. And the Dodgers got very lucky when they signed Freddie Freeman.
So I remember when Dusty Baker, when Yordan Alvarez was hurt late in spring training, and Alvarez comes back and there's a, you know, question the media, will he need a minor league rehab? And Dusty was like, no, he's fine. His swing is so simple and so easy that he's one of those guys that comes back. You mentioned about Freddie with the type of hitter that he is. What is it about his swing that allows him to transition that quickly?
Short, and he's definitely ready to stay inside the baseball. He never attacks the baseball till he see what he want. And that's because he's waiting. And he's waiting to stay inside the baseball, and his swing is short. Now, he's showing you that if you miss inside, he will turn on you. But Freddie's main thing is staying in the middle of the field. I've never, in the 7 years that I worked with Freddie in Atlanta, seen Freddie hit home runs in BP. He just tears the skin off the infield on the left side between short and third. And then at game time, you make a mistake, he gets you. But his approach is so simple, as you just said, Buster. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of maintenance that he has to do with his swing. Now, he's human, so he's going to have days where things don't go right. But just when things need to happen, Freddie is there to make it happen. And he's showing that now.
So put me in your place, paint the picture for me as you're watching, and what's going to be remembered is, you know, one of the great moments in baseball history when he comes up with the bases loaded. Where were you? You know, tell me what's going through your mind as Nestor Cortez is getting ready to pitch to him. What's your thoughts about what Freddie was going to do?
Well, when Mookie got walked in front, I told my wife, this game is over. She said, how you know? I said, that's Freddie Freeman. He works for these moments. Now, did I know he was going to leave the ballpark? No. But I knew he was going to do something fantastic because he always does. I watched him do it. And he walked up there, and Nestor tried to get a fastball past him right away, and Freddie wasn't going for it. And grand slam and first win in the World Series for the Dodgers. And they haven't let up since. I mean, they haven't let up since they left San Diego. But I knew that game was over. Freddie lived for those type of moments. And I think he said that's the type of stuff you look forward to when you're in your backyard at 5 years old playing a game. And it came to reality for him and the Dodgers.
Were you surprised when I talked to Bruce Bochy yesterday? He said out loud what a lot of people have said to me. Well, you knew Freddie was going to try to attack the first pitch. Were you surprised first pitch that he gets a fastball? Because I, in watching the game, I thought that he would throw him a breaking ball to get into the plate appearance.
Well, I was surprised that he threw him a first pitch fastball. But the only reason it was a surprise on a first pitch fastball because he left it out over the plate. If he'd have got it in and tore up Freddie's bat, I don't think there would have been much question about it. But he didn't get it in, so he missed his location. If you're going to throw a first pitch fastball, you got to throw it where if they do get to it, they either miss it or they pull it foul. They don't keep it fair. Well, he didn't get it where he wanted it. And what happened? Freddie kept it fair. Game over.
So I wasn't in the room last night for Aaron Boone's press conference, but this has been related to me secondhand that he was asked the question, you know, how do you feel about your chances down 3-0? And I guess Boone gave the questioner a stare like, what, you know, that's not how we're thinking about it. If you're managing the Yankees today, tell me how you're handling it.
I'm handling it today is the last day. It's the only day. We just play for the day. We don't worry about trying to make up three games. We can just play for today. And we're talking about the Yankees, a storied franchise. We're talking about the Dodgers, a storied franchise. I've been in a situation where we had the Yankees down like this and they came back and won it. So until the Dodgers put them away, I still believe the Yankees have a chance. Now, me personally, I'm a Freddie Freeman fan, so I do want the Dodgers to win. But I do think that the Yankees will find a way today to stay alive. And if they don't, the best team came into the World Series and just showed what they are about, their might. They weren't supposed to be pitching. They out-pitching the Yankees as far as starters go. You know, they always had the powerful bullpen. But they wasn't supposed to pitch on the starting side. But they did. And Buehler, I'm a Buehler fan, too. He's an animal. That guy, I tell you, I watched him during the season when he was Buehler before he got his operations. And now I'm watching him again in the playoffs. When you got it, Buster, you have it. And he has it.
He told me before the World Series started, I got a chance to talk to him, and he said he loved the cold weather. Pitching in the cold weather. And he mentioned that when I talked to him after the game last night, too, that that was something he was going to, you know, take advantage of. Tell me, if you were managing Aaron Judge today, you've seen the plate appearances, you've seen, you know, his at-bats. How would you handle him in terms of, you know, do you say something to him? Do you not say anything to him? Do you just treat it like another day?
Well, I would have told him long before today. I would have told him when it first started, don't put us on your shoulder. Trust your teammates and pass the baton. I think he's just trying to do too much. And in the playoffs, you're facing the best pitchers that baseball has to offer, and they definitely know who you are, and they're going to fight hard to not make mistakes. And I think the Dodgers has done a great job of not making mistakes. I mean, they throw hanging breaking balls, but those hanging breaking balls is in the right place down. So it's not hanging. And Judge see it, but he's trying to do too much. So I would just tell him, man, just pass the baton. Just keep the line moving. Let these other guys play too, because they can. And then the time will come through the course of the ball game that it will be set up for you to be what you and your mind want to be. But to me, look like he's forcing it. and he really doesn't have to force it because he does have some players around him. And that's what I see.
I 100% agree with you. You know, through my time covering baseball, you know, the players who have grace and moments of failure really always stick with you. Dennis Eckersley, after he gave up the Gibson home run, Brad Lidge after giving up the, you know, the home run to Albert Pujols, on and on and on. You know, I can give you cite you many examples of that. And Aaron Judge after the game last night, and I just read the transcript and I saw some of the video. He's asked questions, you know, by folks in my industry about, you know, do you feel like you're letting your teammates down? Absolutely, I do. You know, how are you feeling about yourself? And he, in his responses, is just beating himself up. And there's a part of me that says, okay, I greatly appreciate the grace. And part of me almost wants him to go, you know what, the heck with all you guys. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I felt like he was a sponge last night, just absorbing all of this failure, and it just embedded in him.
And it's a team game. Yes, yeah. He's the star of the team, but baseball, that's what's so beautiful about baseball. You could wake up one morning and feel like nothing is going to happen in your favor and everything goes in your favor. And you can wake up one morning jolly where everything is going to happen and nothing happens. So it's a team sport. And I just think that Aaron Judge, from my view, sitting in my living room, is just trying too hard. Have some fun, relax, see the ball, and try to put your bat head on the ball, and whatever happens, happens. Now, if that's all singles, it's all singles. If it's doubles, it's doubles. But he's trying to keep hitting grand slams every time he go up there, instead of just keeping the line moving, because he got other guys on that team that can perform. And like you said, he's taking on all the pressure. And he should take on all the pressure because he is the main. But he should be able to also play his game. And if they don't give you something to do some damage with, take what they give you. If they want to walk, you walk. If all they're giving you pitches that you can get to get a single, get a single. At least you're keeping the line moving.
And I think you're right about the idea. I mean, it's a team game. Going into that game last night, the Yankees, other than Stanton and Soto and Chisholm, were hitting combined 128. And they just you're going to need more from other people besides Judge as well if they're going to turn this around. That also, for me, has been one of the differences in this World Series so far. I'm curious about your perspective. You know, I talked after the game in this interview that we just played with Eduardo Perez, Jessica Mendoza, Boog Sciambi, and we all debated the decision to send Stanton home, Giancarlo Stanton. Tell me what you saw on that play. They're down 3-0, base hit to left field. Teoscar Hernandez makes an amazing throw home.
Well, you just hit it. Teoscar made an amazing throw home. If that ball is off a little bit, you know, he probably would be in there. But as a third base coach, when you're not scoring runs, sometimes when you get an opportunity, you have to trust your opportunity to score that run. Now, Teoscar came up and made a play. But in the whole series, what the Dodgers been doing? Making plays. He made a play. It went in his favor. It could have very easily not went in his favor, and it might have opened something up for the Yankees to score. They haven't been scoring. And that was an opportunity right there to get it done. And the way the ball was hit, he judged that he had a chance. Teoscar came up with a play. And you just have to live with that. It's not that easy to stand in that third base coaching box and make decisions. And sometimes you make decisions and they work and they shouldn't have worked. And sometimes you make decisions when you know they there's no way it's going to work. And it does. So, you know, he was just being aggressive in a moment because the team needed to try to make something happen. And the defense is out there to do what? Make plays. And that's what the Dodgers been doing since the series started, making plays. But you got to take your chance. I applaud his chance.
All right. Tell me what it's been like for you as a baseball lifer to have watched these series generally. Because I think even though this World Series right now is 3-0, and then, you know, for the fans, that might be a little disappointing. Baseball during this October has been remarkable.
It has been, and I think if anyone would take anything away from these playoffs, look what happened to the San Diego Padres.
Yeah.
They had the Dodgers down, but They act like the Dodgers were just a regular team. They're not. Just like the Yankees aren't a regular team. There's storied history there. And they may pull it out. They may get to the point where they make it a 7-game series. We don't know that until the game is over tonight. But being who the Yankees are and being who the Dodgers are, I got to believe that the Yankees is going to not go down tonight. Now, I don't know what's going to happen after that, but I think they'll find some savior tonight. And maybe that savior might help him to turn this into a 7-game series, because I'm not ready for baseball to end yet, Buster. So I want 7 games. But San Diego should be an example of having control and losing control because they forgot who they were playing on the other side. And once the Dodgers found it, because they back were against the wall, they haven't lost it. And that's the way they're playing right now. But I do believe that the Yankees will pull one out tonight, but I don't know what's going to happen moving past tonight.
All right, before you go, tell us where you see Mike Trout as he's coming back from this year. You know, frustrating year for him with injuries.
Well, I see him in a different frame of mind. I saw him this year feel so bad that he couldn't be a part of what we were trying to accomplish, because I think if he would have been healthy, our season wouldn't have been what it ended up being, just having his presence around. He was so disappointed. And I do think that the injury bug that has hit him the past 3 years or whatever it's been, I think he's over it now. I do think he's going to come into spring training stronger, wiser, smarter. And I think he's going to learn how to pace himself a lot better, because Mike is a workaholic. And I think he has to back off of it sometimes, because a lesser Mike is still better than about 75% of the players that's in the major leagues. I watched this guy work, and nobody works better than Mike. And the stuff that Mike does in his work, there wasn't anyone in my clubhouse that could do it the way Mike do it. And I used to always tell him, bro, you still got it. You still got it. You can do things that there's other guys in this game could only imagine about doing it. And you still can do it. He's a special kid. I just hope his health can stay there. And if his health stayed there, I think I'm not going to say that we might get that MVP, but we might get that MVP. See, I can't call it off. I can't say we won't, and I can't say we will. But we might, because you know why? That's Mike Trout, and he's special. So I think he'll come back good and healthy, and we got to help him pace himself. We do. We have to help him pace himself, because he's a wild animal.
So a couple of winters ago, Wash, and I'm sure you're aware of this, the Yankees went to Giancarlo Stanton, who's a big man. Like, he's bigger than most players. And they, you know, part of the conversation with him was, look, to take pressure off your body, we want you to reduce your weight somewhat, you know, streamline somewhat. And he did that. He didn't do as much heavy weightlifting. Mm-hmm. And he's been on the field more the last 2 years. I'm curious, you know, because Mike, as you know, you stood next to him. He is a big guy. And I'm wondering if there's anything along those lines that you guys have talked about going into the winter about his training.
Oh, yes. We talked about it. But I mean, when you looked at Mike this year, he's a big man, but he was trim. He was trim.
Okay.
He eats well. He's not a massive weightlifter. That's just his body. But what I'm saying that we got to help him to back off some is we just got to watch his workload that he's taking on. Make sure he's ready to play, but not overdue. Mike overdue. Mike don't ever think that he's satisfied with what he's doing. And we have to back him off of that. We got to try to get his mindset to settle down and understand that his presence is more important than his performance. His presence is more important than his performance, because him just being around help everyone else be what they should be. And him being around, holding them accountable for that, is a huge help. We know who Mike Trout is. We know Mike Trout is going to get his if he stay healthy and get the at-bats. If he stay healthy and able to stay on the field, Mike Trout going to get his. But we need his presence so the rest of the guys can get theirs.
Yeah, and we're talking about a guy who someday should be unanimous selection for the Hall of Fame. You know, he's been that great of a player.
He's a special guy. He really is. And Buster, I wish you could have seen how dejected he was this year. He showed up every day to the clubhouse when we were in town. He showed up every day. He mingled with the guys, but it hurt him so much when the game started that he couldn't be out there performing and helping us. But he watched these young kids grow, and I think in a way it helped him to even be more fired up to come back and help, because he see he got some kids that can play. But they had to go through the experience, and he watched them go through the experience. He didn't watch them give up at going through the experience. They didn't make excuses. And I think they endeared him with them the way they played, that he was watching.
All right, Wash. Always love talking baseball with you. When I see Freddie later, I'll tell him you said hi.
Make sure you do that. And just tell him he's a baddie. He'll know what you're saying. And he calls me Ronald. And I calls him Frederick.
Before game three, Commissioner Rob Manfred was in the press box, and Book Shambi and I got a chance to talk with him. Give a listen.
Mr. Commissioner, welcome. How are you?
I'm great. How can you not be great with this matchup?
Yeah, no question. Good. There's so many things to get to. Let's start with the macro. Obviously, as the game goes on, we're going to deconstruct Shohei Ohtani and how healthy he is. But can you talk to me a little bit about the impact that Shohei Ohtani has had on the game, on the Japanese market? I mean, viewership over there has been incredible. Close to 15 million people watching it over in Japan in game two. Speak to that a bit.
Yeah, he has been an unbelievable driver of growth in our Asian business. You know, it started really with the opener in Korea. That opening game was in prime time, still the most watched MLB game in Japan, with 17 million people. You know, almost doubled our prior audience for an opener anywhere in Asia. And, you know, the postseason, it's just continued to grow. And you remember, these games are on in the morning, you know. I mean, people are taking a break from their day in order to watch. So it's really been a tremendous impact for us. I think we've also seen it, you know, like our sponsorship business, the Dodgers sponsorship business, really taken off, and all driven by Shohei.
How much does that affect your thinking about opening up in the Far East going forward?
Well, look, I think that you're going to see us do more and more in the Far East. Both, you know, Korea was a real success. The facility there is good enough for the economics to work for us. And, you know, Japan has always been great for us. We've always liked those openers there. The relationship between Major League Baseball and NPB is a really important one for us. We found a way to coexist in a way that the domestic product both places thrives, and, you know, great players are able to go back and forth between the two countries. Been good for both of us, I think.
Well, I can certainly tell you firsthand, as someone that does the Cubs on television, the impact of Shota Imanaga and Seiya Suzuki, and they're the second part of that matchup over in Tokyo to begin the season next year. That should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we pick the teams right for next year. I will say that much for us. It should be really interesting.
All right, let's bounce around a little bit. Let's talk starting pitching. That's been a hot topic. So far in the postseason, there have been 40 postseason games, and eight times both starters have gone five or more innings. So we see the decline of the starter, more relievers impacting. What's your take? What can you do about it?
Look, I think that I think about it from the fan perspective. You know, historically, some of our biggest stars have been starting pitchers. It's easy to understand that. It's who you see the most during a broadcast. People used to pick games based on pitching matchups, you know, a great matchup of starting pitchers. And I think in terms of fan engagement, it's important for us to think about how we bring that role back. Thinking about it is the hard part. I am not a believer in the idea that you can have kind of prescriptive, you have to pitch six inning kind of rules. I think we're going to have to go at this one by trying to create incentives for the clubs to place greater value on starters going deeper into games, And if we get those incentives right, I think the clubs will respond to it. Exactly what those incentives are, I can't tell you. I have a good answer yet.
Well, when you guys changed the number of rules to try to increase offense a couple of years ago, that followed years of experiment. What are some of the ideas being sort of kicked around on how to make that happen?
I think the ones that have had the most traction relate to two issues: roster composition, you know, kind of limiting who you can carry. And the second one, where I think we'll find a lot of common ground with the MLBPA, which is always important, is transaction rules. You know, an important part of, you know, making the bullpens dominant is the ability to, now you can't do it in the postseason, obviously, but during the regular season, running guys in and out. And, you know, that's not great for players, obviously, to be run in and out. It affects service time and things like that that are very important over the life of somebody's baseball career. So I think those are some of the areas that we think could be helpful.
How happy are you with the way the postseason has played out in terms of competition, et cetera? Because obviously adding extra teams has changed the playoffs. We have ended up, by the way, with the teams with the best records in their respective leagues after some complained in terms of the newer format.
Yeah, I like the format right now. I think that we listened to people about the wild card round. You know, there was this sort of desire for these knockout games, the one-game series and all that. I think that having the three-game series, which is the way baseball's played, is a better first-round test for everybody. I'm not a huge believer in the layoff being a problem, and the reason for that is if you talk to people who are not sitting during the layoff, they all say the same thing. Tell them they got a choice. They can either play another round or they can take the layoff. So I don't put a ton of credence in that. Overall, I think the you know, obviously we had great markets for us in the postseason. I think players get lucky when you have probably the two best players in the game make it all the way to the World Series. Those are, you know, absolutely crucial thing. Everybody recognizes them. But I do think that the piece that we haven't talked about enough, the quality of the individual games has been so high. The late inning lead changes, the excitement, the athleticism. You think about the athleticism of some of the ground balls that did not get through when we were out in L.A. Unbelievable. And, you know, our research that, you know, we rely on, those are the kinds of things fans like to see, you know, that athleticism, late inning changes, and so we did deliver games that I think are really good for our fans.
One of the looming questions in baseball now is where are the Tampa Bay Rays going to play in 2025, given the condition of the Trop? I know you are not close to making a decision on that, but what are some of the important factors that are going to go into that decision?
Well, you know, obviously number one is exactly what the condition of the Trop is and how quickly we can get it ready. You know, it makes a difference whether you're, you know, you got to cover 60 games or you're covering the whole year. So that's kind of factor one. Factor two, and this is an important one for us, you know, we have always tried to demonstrate loyalty to the markets where we are. You know, we ask a lot of our fans, 81's a lot of games for people to go to. And I think that, you know, our first priority is going to be to try to be as close to where they ordinarily play as possible. That's really important. Then, of course, when you start thinking about that, you have to think about weather. You know, Florida, we had some experience with the Blue Jays staying in Dunedin. You know, they eventually moved up to Buffalo. A big piece of that was not so much heat, but it's rain and when it rains in Florida as you move into the summer months. So we got to think those things through.
Mr. Commissioner, we really appreciate you stopping by. Thanks so much for taking the time. You got a chance to present the Roberto Clemente Award to Salvador Perez. That was a pretty cool moment.
It really was. I think that for me, first of all, he's an amazing person and all that he has done. It was really neat. Carlos Carrasco showed up unannounced, bought tickets to the game, never called anybody, showed up in the front row, and Luis Arraez also showed up, made a little speech actually, took the microphone when the Q&A period opened up. So it was really a great moment, I thought.
Enjoy tonight.
Yeah, thank you. I will. I always do.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday. Got two voicemails here. The duality of man. Let's hear from the Dodger fan first.
Hi, this is Mays, big-time Dodger fan from what is slowly becoming Dodger hater capital of the world, San Diego, California. I just wanted to leave a comment. Just watch the Dodgers handle their business today. Don't want to hear any more about Dodger bullpen games and the disadvantage they're at, because the way the Dodgers are swinging the bat, every game is a bullpen game for the opponent, the opposite team. Anyways, love the show. Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to hear it.
No, he doesn't want to hear it. I don't blame him. I mean, going into the series, I talked about the advantage the Yankees starting pitching had over the Dodgers. That has certainly not played out. And yeah, the Dodgers have a bullpen game in game four, but the way this series is going, like, it doesn't matter. And Dave Roberts has all of his great relievers lined up, ready to go.
Scott Holland wrote in bleachertweets@gmail.com. Similar train of thought here. We actually read his email last week where he mentioned that the Dodgers pitching completely neutralized the Padres offense, and he just wanted to chime in, feeling pretty vindicated so far. So there you go, Scott.
And rightly so. You know what? It looks like you're going to wind up with the ring. And for Dodger fans, boy, Ron Washington's comments about the Padres, that must make you smile, right? That the Padres had control of that series and they just lost it. I mean, if in fact the Dodgers do go on and win this World Series, we're going to, in writing the narrative, I mean, they were this close, it felt like, the Dodgers to being knocked out. And since then, I mean, they haven't missed a beat, right? They've just been killing everybody.
Buzzsaw. All right, let's hear from some Yankee fans.
What's up, guys? It's Max from Virginia, diehard Yankees fan. I turned the game off. Of course, Judd grounds out. Doing nothing to the lineup is insane. Like, you got to move Judge down. You got to do something. And they're not doing anything. And the frustrating thing is they're going to run it back next year. Soto's going to walk. Hell, Cole may opt out. And they're going to run it back next year. And they're going to be like, oh, well, we got close. We made the World Series. We got made the playoffs, made the World Series. Crapshoot. No. This is a bad baseball team. Boone needs to go. The undisciplinedness of the laziness, the base running, the errors, the Rojas and the sandstone. Someone's got to be held accountable.
Yikes.
Taylor, I've told you in the past that, you know, when I covered the Yankees back in the 90s when George Steinbrenner was the owner, and that perspective, and I really mean this as an observation, not as a judgment, okay? That perspective absolutely came from George, you know?
when
he just referred to this team as a bad baseball team, they led the American League in wins. They got through the American League playoffs. They're the American League champions. They are still, as you and I speak, four wins away from potentially winning the World Series. I don't know. I just think that's a little stark to say they're a bad baseball team. But you know what? That's what George always felt. If you don't win the World Series, you stink.
Hilarious. We have another Yankee fan here, Mary Stancavage. She went to game one with a Dodgers fan friend. And even though they lost, she said she couldn't deny it was electric. And she noted, you know, we root for stories around here. And she said she found herself quite moved by Yoren Boog's conversations with Freddie Freeman yesterday. He is a great player, great guy. And even though Grand Slam kill me, we root for stories. And that is a hell of a story. So sorry about your Yanks, Mary, but thanks for writing in.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. And Taylor, I've said this to you a million times, said this on the podcast before. You root for great stories and root for good stuff to happen to good people. And that's what's going on with Freddie Freeman right now.
Absolutely. All right. Shout out to Bonzi Williams, who is resigned to a sweep, Yankees fan. He also wants a signed baseball from the show. That seems weird, Buster. I'm flattered, but that seems weird.
Have you ever signed an autograph?
Absolutely not.
Okay. We got to make that happen. Get a baseball, you know, acquire a baseball, sign it, send it out to me in Montana, and we will forward it.
All right. All right. Well, we got to get Sarah Lang's signature on there too. Maybe we can pass it around a little bit. All right. That's it for Bleacher Tweets, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow. Clown Car, Tori Lovello. Thanks, everyone.
All right, my thanks today to Taylor Schwenk, who is grinding it. AM, PM, I was talking with your bosses last night. Justin Craig was in the press box. We're talking about how great you are, Taylor.
Yes,
so thank you so much for your work.
You're my guy, Buster. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a fun conversation. We talked about all your personality quirks, too. My thanks also today to Ron Washington, to the folks in the clown card, Eduardo Perez, and Jessica Mendoza and Boog Shambi. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Ooh.
Yeah, we did. Justin and I talked about you yesterday.
Good convo with Justin.